This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 80.
Cash Flow Portal is a real estate syndication software that helps streamline equity raising, helps syndicators reach out to investors, as well as giving a source of truth of a system of record for all the passive investors.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt? Invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today's guest is Perry Zhang, and Perry is the founder and CEO of Cash Flow Portal. It's a real estate syndication software. He currently lives in Seattle, where he owns six single-family properties. Perry started a real estate syndication 3 years ago. Today, he has more than 1,500 units and raised over $16 million as a lead syndicator on two deals totaling 580 units. His goal was to help other syndicators succeed and overcome common challenges like raising capital and finding deals even while having a full-time job. Speaking of full-time jobs, Perry just left his full-time job at Lyft as the engineering manager to go full-time with Cashflow Portal. Previous to that, he worked at Twitter and Amazon. So, Perry, what an amazing background. I'm super excited to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Mike, for having me. I'm super excited to be here as well.
Awesome. The way I'd like to start this off is the way I start every episode off. And I talked a little bit about your background, and that's all like wave top stuff, and you're doing like some amazing things. So I want to try to get into some more detail about that. So if you could share your story with us and go into some detail about how this all started for you.
Yeah. I started investing in rental properties about 6 or 7 years ago when I bought my first condo in San Francisco. It's a condo with three bedrooms. I live in one of the bedrooms and I rent out the other two. So I started with house hacking. It's very expensive to buy there. And I don't believe that was exactly an investment. I just got lucky and buying at the right time. Then I started reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast. So I caught the bug of wanting to buy an actual investment property. And we looked around San Francisco and the Bay Area, and that's how I met my business partner, Edward Sittler. I moved back to Seattle to buy another house hacking property. It's a five bedroom. I live in one of the bedrooms and rent out the other four. Purchase price is around $415,000. And the monthly rent for each of the rooms is about $700. So you do the math, I was basically living there for at most $100 per month without counting for the appreciation as well as the tax benefits of that single family. So I thought that's not hard and I don't mind living with housemates. And so I bought one again every 9 to 12 months after that. After a certain point, I realized that the banks will not lend me any more money if I keep buying single families at these traditional banks. So I started looking into real estate syndication and multifamily. I spent about a year learning multifamily by joining a mentorship group. It does take a year. And yeah, no, if you asked me 5, 6 years ago, why is real estate syndication? I probably wouldn't know either. It's a very young field and it's very exciting. That's funny, a lot of upfront costs.
That's fantastic. So you started off house hacking before you even knew what that was. And then you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the Purple Bible that most of us have read and started listening to Bigger Pockets, which is absolutely one of my favorite podcasts as well. So going from there, you decided it was time to scale up and buy some more rental properties to make a profit here. So you moved back to Seattle, right, from San Francisco to house hack again. Now that first property, the way you were describing it, I wasn't sure. Was that cash flowing or after all the rent came in, you were still paying about $100 a month?
Good question. At that case, I was still paying about $100 a month.
Okay.
But I did not include the fact at the end of the year, it is my primary residence. And the portion that I was living in the house could be my primary residence. And the interest that I was paying in that portion is tax deductible. So if you do the math, right, I was not paying, right? And secondly, once I move out of that house, that room will rent. I live in a master room. That room will rent for $850. So I will be cash flowing about $700. So yes, right, I was paying $100. But I think that might be a lesson to some of the listeners, that just because you're paying $100 doesn't mean it's a bad house hack. You don't have to make every single house hack such that you pay nothing.
You're sitting here, you're living in Seattle, not a very cheap cost of living area. And you're living in a $450,000 home for $100 a month. But that's a pretty good deal if you ask me. And then you started going out there every 9 months or so and doing it over and over again. So that first one, now it becomes a cash flowing asset, because now you rent out that fifth room and you're collecting at least $700 a month. Fantastic. And then on top of that, let's not even get into the weeds here, but like the appreciation, everything else, and the depreciation that you were able to claim, especially while filing your taxes, then also the interest and all that. I would say that paying $100 a month while you were living in that property was a pretty good deal.
That was a very good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And then moving on from there, you decided you wanted to scale even higher and start looking at real estate syndications, right? And that's one of the fastest ways to scale both the amount of units and also your monthly cash flow, is to start looking into multifamily. I've had multiple guests on that talk about that, how they go from single family, or they have small multifamily like duplex, triplex, quadplexes, and then they decide it's time to get into something bigger. And that's when they start looking at real estate syndications. Now, you said you actually sat here and researched this for a year before you finally pulled the trigger and got into your first syndication. So you said you did a coaching program, or what was it that you did to educate yourself?
Yeah. So a little bit about the background. We did a JV on a 7-unit in Tacoma before I went full steam into the coaching program. And the story there is that we bought the 7-unit. It's a $540,000 in Tacoma. We put in $150,000 in renovations. So it's about $700,000 total. And we sold it about 18 months later for $900,000. About while that's going on, we tried to buy another multifamily in the Seattle area. And that one we got outbid. We did not win the deal. It's a $3.2 million deal for 20 units. It's very expensive in Seattle. We didn't win that deal. We would have won it if I pay, say, $3.25 by paying $50,000 more for that deal. And that's when I realized I want to be in a program where the name speaks for itself, that the brokers took us seriously if they saw, okay, you're part of the XYZ program. Okay. And so that's when I went to Dallas, and my business partner is awesome. He moved to Dallas after we joined the program to be full-time asset manager / boots on the ground. So super blessed with the right team. So he's there in Dallas, underwriting, looking at properties every day, looking at the broker's deal box. I'm in Seattle, also underwriting, talking to brokers, lenders, as well as just thinking about what's the next step. And then we can get into that whole equity raising part as well. But from the moment that we joined the program to the moment that we have a deal under contract, it took us about 7 months. And that 7 months was, to me, it was very long, 7 to 9 months. We finally closed it in about a year after we joined the program. It took us about 3 months to close. Yep.
Wow. So, and that was the first deal that you guys did together as a partnership?
Yeah, as a syndicator. Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's not the 7-unit, right? This is something else in Dallas?
So the 7-unit in Tacoma was also Ed and I, we did that together. Okay. And then the first true syndication is 172 units. We were also the syndicators on that one. Every deal I have done is I'm the lead syndicator. I try not to do co-sponsorship or like just helping raise equity and doing a little bit of asset management. But that's because I believe that if the deal didn't do well, then there's no next deal. That's it. That is my belief.
That's fantastic. So you take a lot of sense of ownership when you go into this. And So now that first one, that seven unit, that was just basically a JV between you and your partner. The two of you came up with the money, took this down. And from there, you said you sold it for $900K 18 months later. That's a pretty good turn in just a year and a half. Well done. You got your money back and then some. It gave you a lot of equity to play with there to start looking at something else. What made you guys decide to look at in the Dallas and like DFW area?
Yeah, good question. So one of the common questions that people ask when they got into syndication is, what area do I focus on? And my answer to that is, it depends on what you want. There are people who want a little bit of every market, and there are people like me who want everything of a market. What I mean by that is, we looked at Cincinnati, looked at Lexington, Kentucky, and looked at the Midwest and the Southeast. And it felt like Southeast is too far from Seattle. The Midwest is dominated by institutional investors or people who have been in the game for a long time. So things were sold privately under market, off market, sorry. And then whereas Dallas is like the best in terms of transparency as well as the deal flow. Every day you see a deal come online. Whereas in Cincinnati, you could wait for a week before you see any deal that's like on the market. So that's a big part of it. And the fact that the coaching program is in Dallas helps that every vendor that we need is in Dallas. And so as Air was there for some time, he started building up that relationship with every vendor, right? Is Dallas the best market? It is probably one of the most competitive market for multifamily. But is it the market that we have the most competitive advantage in terms of whom we know, what we know, as well as the neighborhoods? Yes. So my goal is to build up more than 1,000 units in Dallas so I can have leverage to either create my own property management company or leverage someone so that we can JV on a property management company. Because the most important part of multifamily is controlling for the quality of the assets.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great point. And you're a little more than halfway there. You've got 580 units now. You're getting pretty close. So
thank you for saying that. I'm happy to report that since the last time I filled out that form, we're actually at 800 units, 840 units. That's great. Okay. But we are selling the first property. So we're back down to 500 plus units.
Okay. That's not a bad thing though. That's not a bad thing. That one's coming full circle. Awesome. So now I have to ask you this, because a lot of people that listen to this show, they're full-time working professionals and they're on their journey to getting out of debt and they want to invest. And a lot of them are looking at real estate now as an option, right? Now, you did this while you were working full-time, right? So you were at Twitter and then Amazon and most recently at Lyft until not too long ago. How did you get yourself to a point where you were able to have the free time to put into this, especially going in as a lead syndicator? So like right now, for me personally, like being full-time, I just got to my first syndication recently and it's as a limited partner because I don't feel like I have the time to try to put into that. So how did you piece this together while being a full-time employee?
Yeah, great question. I don't really have a perfect answer, in my opinion. I think it's a combination of who you are as a person, your personality, your grit. I know when I was growing up, I don't really need to listen to like motivational speeches in a way, because I'm very internally driven. And so you could argue that could be innate. So I have that. And that might be the result of a lot of micro positive reinforcements when I was a kid. When I was growing up, I was usually the top of my class. So until I got into college, and then I realized I was not in high school, I already realized I was not one of the smartest people. So there's that. And then when I was doing well at Lyft, I think my mentors and my managers really thought that I was good. And that really helped me believe in something, or they believe in me before I believe in myself in a way. So that helped. So going back to your question, how do I allocate or divide my time? I don't really think of it like that. I felt like if you're passionate about real estate, you subconsciously, unconsciously think about it. You think about when you're driving. A classic example was people were asking me how much they will be getting back on their property tax or their interest rate tax rebate. And I did the math, you should put down 20%. So the debt coverage is 80%. And your, say your high income earners is 30% or 33% tax rate. So 30% times 80% is about 24, 25%. So by telling you how much you purchase it for, in my mind, I can do the math and tell you how much money you should get back in terms of tax rebate. And whenever people heard that, they're like, oh my God, how do you know this? I'm like, yeah, I think about that while I'm driving. And that, sir, does not take you to divide out the time to do X or Y, Z. You just think about it. Okay. So that's one. It's just like, if you're obsessed about something, you think about it every day, every like parts of the day. And second, it will be a really bad idea, in my opinion, that people quit their W-2 job to focus on real estate full time before they're seeing that momentum. Because number one, if you're not passionate about it in to do it while having a W-2 job, then you're probably not passionate about enough. And you are not going to find something fulfilling and rewarding by using it as an escape from something you don't like. That's my opinion. So there's that. So show that you're good at it. Get at least one rental or a couple duplexes or whatnot, and then say, okay, I have proven that I can do this. And now if I do more of it, this is going to eventually replace my W-2 income. That's real estate. And kind of the same thing with my startup. Now, I think in your case, there is a point in which physically, you just do not have enough time. For the last year and a half, I was basically doing three jobs. I was an engineering manager at Lyft. I was doing two syndications while having a full-time job. And then I have my startup. And I could say that you can do real estate syndication while having a full-time job, but I was burning out doing a startup while having a full-time job and a syndication. And so I think it's 10 times harder. And so I did need to quit at some point. Yeah. I don't know. Happy to answer more questions.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. All great points too, because it was something that one of the things I wrote down here, the most recent one, is how you subconsciously would think about real estate. And even to the point where you can do this napkin math in your head that they've got questions about going in on a deal with you. And you're just like, hey, give me a second. Let me put them to the calculator here. Yeah, you're going to get this much back for your tax return. That's amazing, man. That's a testament of the hard work and effort that you've put into it, that you're at the point where you can just spit this stuff out. That's amazing. But I want to point some things out that really stick out to me and I think is absolutely awesome, where you're talking about how even since your childhood, there's something that you mentioned. It was micropositive reinforcements as a child that got you to this point where it always helped you, it gave you that inner motivation and that push to keep doing that. You were inspired as a kid. And I think that's important for anybody that's listening who's a parent right now, that instill that mindset into your children, instill that motivation, lift them up and be positive. Because what Perry's doing here is a perfect example of being raised in a positive household where he was able to get this subconsciously, just in the back of his head, this motivation, this innate motivation that's always there. So that's really wonderful to hear. I had to write that down. I had to write that down because I have two young daughters. And that's one of the things that I try to focus on with them is just their whole thought process when it comes to money, what to do with money, how to invest. And financial education, I think, is something that's we really lack in the public education system. Being that we homeschool our kids, that's part of their curriculum is financial education. I think that's fantastic. And I really loved hearing that part of your story. That's absolutely amazing. Now, you mentioned this, your startup, and I want to talk about your startup, right? So you started this startup, it's called the Cashflow Portal, right? Now, besides that, because I know you're like a tech junkie, and this is one of the things I'm excited to talk to you about. Now, the Cashflow Portal, what exactly is the Cashflow Portal? Can you describe it? And how would somebody who's an investor or has a real estate business, how would they benefit from checking out the Cashflow Portal?
Good question. So Cashflow Portal is a real estate syndication software that helps streamline equity raising, helps syndicators reach out to investors, as well as giving a source of truth of a system of record for all the passive investors. So if you are a passive investor, traditionally, you will get a DocuSign to sign all your documents in the email. And then once you sign it, you will receive monthly emails from your syndicator on the performance of that deal or that of that fund. And then you will ask your syndicator once in a while on how the property is doing. Say you invest $50,000, how much is that really $50,000 worth? And then when it comes to tax returns, your syndicator might give you a call to write down your social security number so that they can file the K-1s on your behalf. And they give you a piece of K-1 and they'll send it to you. That whole logistics seems very scattered, fragmented, and a little bit kind of mom and pop, not professional. That's not how you do it when you invest $50K in the stock market. Now, the value for the syndicator is I am trying to raise $4 million from, say, 70 investors. I need to send out 70 DocuSigns. Then I get back the DocuSign, countersign it, put the name on my spreadsheet, denote how much they invested. Every 3 months, I write down how much each person has gotten their distributions, and then I send out the emails through MailChimp. And then at the end of the year, I need to record everyone's bank statement so I know their ACH as well as their social security to file the taxes. That also seems a little bit unprofessional, and that also takes a lot of time. So the idea is having a centralized source of truth helps the syndicators become more efficient with their time, can do more deals, raise more money, as well as become professional in front of the investors.
Right on. There was one word you said, though, that you said it was unprofessional. I would say it's more like outdated, right? With the way current technology is, just the way that you could do things and automate certain things. I would say it's more outdated. And one of the things that you're bringing to the table is like that refresh, that tech refresh, that upgrade that's going to benefit those general partners that are doing these deals. And the whole time I'm sitting here in my head thinking, like, as you're describing the process and the going back and forth with DocuSign, and I realized this from the most recent syndication that I got myself involved in too, just going back and forth. And now the general partner that's sitting here, like as the operations officer that's sitting here and crunching the numbers and sending out the monthly updates and saying, okay, this is how well it's performed. This is how much you're getting on your return this month and blah, blah, blah. Doing that for 70 other people, you probably just gave everybody listening to this show that's a GP some type of like PTSD just now. They're sitting here like, oh my God, he's right. So no, that's awesome. Yeah. So this alleviates a lot of that pain that these lead syndicators are going through. So it's definitely something that they might want to check out. Now, being a tech junkie as yourself, besides the cash flow portal, what other like real estate apps or websites do you like or that you currently use yourself while scoping out different deals?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about the podcast editing service that we use for the Average Joe Finances podcast. That is editpods.com. And what I really like about them is it's a subscription-based service, so the prices are fantastic. And not only do they do the podcast episodes for us, but they also make us videos, audiograms, social media caption videos. They do our show notes, thumbnails. It's just fantastic products. Go check them out at editpods.com.
What's going on, everybody? So today I want to talk to you about Buzzsprout. The Average Joe Finances podcast recently switched over to Buzzsprout, and I got to say, I am super happy with the progress. Our podcast is now on every single major platform and reaching audiences that we couldn't reach before, which is just super awesome. So thank you to Buzzsprout for being such a great platform. But also I want to say, hey guys, if you sign up for Buzzsprout and you sign up for one of their paid plans using our link, you'll get a $20 Amazon gift card. So go check them out. It's averagejoefinances.com/Buzzsprout, and we'll make sure the link is in the show notes below.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, good question. So I would tell you that we do not pay for... Okay, yeah, Asana is something we use to work with the property management company to keep track of the tasks they do, although we don't follow them religiously. Every single one of our meetings with our weekly property management company, we use Google Doc to keep track of our notes. So we are religiously taking notes. I really like this habit of yours of taking notes as well. And a Google Sheet to keep track of a KPIs, key performance indicators. So those will be what's the occupancy, economic vacant occupancy, how many work orders do we still have, how many users we have term, and so on and so forth. And that we right now we do it in the KPI. Then every deal, we use a spreadsheet to underwrite. There's a back of the napkin underwriting, and there's the full board underwriting. And so obviously, there have been many tools that come up to replace that spreadsheet with a software. There's a saying that if something is in a spreadsheet, there's probably a business for it. I agree with that statement, except that so far, I have seen a software that's as flexible as a spreadsheet. I use Cashflow Portal myself every single day to keep track of my which one of my investors has seen their K-1s or their distributions, and be able to email them and send them a monthly newsletter while we're closing on this deal or not. And yeah, from a general purpose perspective, okay, so going back to the underwriting, people can use, if people want to know what is the market rent, there are many ways of doing it. One is to go out and do competitor surveys yourself. Second, you do the hard work of going on Craigslist, type in the zip code, put a 1 mile radius, put the view into map instead of list, so you can find, locate the location of your property, and then look at what everyone else around the area is charging. That's work. There's nothing to automate it. You just have to open up Craigslist and look at it. If you are doing Airbnb, I will go on Airbnb and look up how much a one night will charge for this neighborhood. So I use all these little websites to gain information about this area or this deal.
Yeah, that's great. Like writing down the stuff that you're talking about. So I've heard of many syndicators that use Asana as it's a good website for teams and everything. But Google Notes for Google Docs for notes, that's awesome. As well as Google Sheets for tracking your KPIs. Absolutely awesome. It's kind of like back to the basics, but the basics that are so good and you can continue using it no matter what. And then even going as far as to go to Craigslist, and yeah, you got to do a little bit of the work yourself, but you're getting probably a little bit more of a accurate data picture versus using something else like another website that will go out and automate it for you. You're going to get something like a more accurate picture. So you can actually be a little more conservative with how you're coming up with your deals, like under promise, but over deliver type deal, instead of like saying, hey, this is what we're going to get. And then you get exactly just that, where you can come in and be like, hey, based off the surveys, we're going to say that we can get around here. And then when you come in and do something better, now you over delivered and makes your investors happier to move on with you to the next deal, like you said, right? Because your mindset is if the deal doesn't go well, there is no next deal. So I think that carries into the work that you put into it. I'm pretty sure you just proved that by stating how you go about and do your things, right? Even with either it's a competitor survey or even just like niching down on Craigslist down to that particular area and just targeting the area. And great point that you made too, for those that are like doing like Airbnb or VRBOs and stuff like that, to go in there and see what the competitors are doing, like what that market looks like, and build your own price list based off of that. Because then you're going to have a good idea of what you could charge for rent, and will that work for the price of property that you're going to purchase? All that stuff is definitely fantastic advice. Okay. Now, since you are like the tech guy, right? And I know you're huge into the digital world. What do you think the digital future for real estate is?
Yeah, good question. One thing is people are really excited about syndication, but what people don't realize is it's a very green field. It's only been at most 9 years. I think it was 2012 when the law was passed. It takes about 2 years for it to even like to people even hear about it. And then it's only not until 2018 or 19 that it started really gaining traction. So I think it's still a second inning on all the real estate syndication. If you look at 1031 exchange, that's been here for more than 50 years. By second inning, I think there are still 40 more years to go after the first decade. Okay. And there are many more. And it might be common sense after a few decades that, oh yeah, this is what we do. And so what that means is you have this huge growth of real estate syndicators. You get into real estate syndication. Someone else is getting into real estate syndication. And guess what? It's not just multifamily. Real estate syndication is just a generic term of pulling money to buy something larger than one can buy, period. That happened to involve the logistics of signing PPMs so that you agree contractually and legally to a binding agreement to share the profit. And it could be actually buying a amazing Airbnb down in Maui or Hawaii that you are the operator of that Airbnb and you syndicate it. It could be self-storage, it could be residential, it could be a portfolio of residential. So because of that high growth of syndicators, I should have answered your question directly, is that as a passive investor coming into real estate syndication, they have no idea who's good and who's not good. They can look at people's websites and get an idea, but there's no way to say so-and-so is good. Or they're just a good salesperson without sitting down and talking to them. So I think the digital future is moving towards information sharing and the equivalent of a IMDb of real estate syndicators in the world. That's where I think it's going. A place where you can see the track record and the reviews of real estate syndicators. Now, that may not be a reality, but I do believe that's better for the world to have it than not have it.
Yeah, I was actually just going to comment on that too, because when you mentioned it's like becoming like the IMDb of real estate syndicators, right? So it's just now you want to see the track records of people, because as it's growing, there's a lot of people now like getting into syndications, like starting off fresh and brand new, and you don't know who they are. They could be like up and coming and be the best, but you don't know who they are. I think the route you went when you started and got yourself involved in a bigger name by going through that coaching program, you were able to add a little more merit to your background, right? And be more of a known force in the syndication space, right? Mm-hmm. So something like that's very important. Like if I was to say, hey, I want to be a GP and do my first syndication and I'm going to start it like next week, people are like, what the heck do you know about this stuff, Mike? But the thing is, the background that you get as you're doing these. So by myself right now, going in as a limited partner, I'm going to be going into multiple deals and getting this experience and learning from like successful GPs. Maybe in the future, who knows, maybe I get into some type of coaching program similar to what you did. And then mm-hmm. if I decide in the future to start my own syndication as a general partner, that is something that I've got a good background and a good resume to support me starting up. It's important to, especially for somebody who's going in as a limited partner, I can tell you from experience as a limited partner, that you really want to vet the team that you're going in with. You want to know that you're not putting your money into something that's going to fail. Yep. And a lot of times, if the numbers work, syndications, it's pretty hard for them to fail. They're pretty resistant to outside influences, but there is things that can affect them, right? Especially if there's like a lack of experience for the operators that are going in there and finding these deals. So that's super important that that the team that you're working with has the right knowledge, has the right skill set, and will be a good steward of your money, because ultimately that's what they are. They're stewards of your money. So yeah, a very great point. And so I want to talk a little bit more about you personally, right? So now I know you were working in, I guess, like the tech space, right? When you worked for Twitter and Amazon and Lyft, now going full-time into real estate as a syndicator. Sure. I want to know, because what we talk about on this podcast is personal finances all around, not just real estate. So is there any other asset classes that you personally, mm-hmm. yourself, invest in besides real estate?
Yeah, people ask me about my allocation of my wealth. It is probably 70% in real estate and then 30% everything else. Losing my job definitely takes a big hit into my income. It is called a golden handcuff for people who are in tech. It's a golden handcuff. my time going forward is actually going to be 90% in my startup where I will be growing it. Mm-hmm. And it's a scalable, there's definitely product market fit. It's growing 80 to 100% week over week at this point. And so it's actually really fun and really, really busy.
That's exciting. That's really exciting.
Hyper growth, that kind of feeling is startup is definitely the most fun thing I have ever done. It's also the hardest thing I have done. I took it from someone that if I'm not willing to grind my startup, which is a very high risk business, while having a W-2 job for at least a few months, then I'm probably not passionate about the idea of the startup at all. I grinded for a year and a half at this point. So I think I pay my dues. So it's time to go audit. In terms of my asset classes, going forward, my income, I wouldn't have that much income because the startup, I'll be putting all the profit back into the startup and it's going to be a venture-backed or angel-backed startup in just a few months. Then I continue to do one syndication every 9 months to a year. So I don't think I will be a full-time syndicator ever, just because I don't believe that I want to be a full-time asset manager in a way. I think I'm not a bad syndicator, but I also know that there are way better syndicators out there than I am, just from a mindset and just from a like passion perspective. My passion lies in technology and building an ecosystem and a marketplace so that the best syndicators don't have to look for equity ever again. If they're the best syndicators, by definition, the money should go to them. And if they're not the greatest syndicators or the good syndicators, it's capability, passion, and integrity. Those three things define how a deal is going to work. And if they have all of those, they shouldn't worry about money. And if they don't have them, then maybe they should be known.
Yeah, Perry, that's all great points. And one of the things I wrote down here, because this kind of stands out to me, is how you're talking about you enjoy the syndications, right? But you're not entirely sure that this is what you want to keep doing because you don't want to be an asset manager for the rest of your life. But at the same time, the way I'm looking at it from that statement is pretty much like it's a means to an end for you to push your startup even further. So you got this experience, you've learned and what those pain points are for those that are in the syndications, and you're providing a solution to a problem. And that's what every good business does. There's a problem, somebody comes in with a solution, and that becomes the business, which is exactly what you're doing right now. So that's fantastic. So you take the headaches that all these main syndicators and general partners are having, and you alleviate that, and this becomes your bread and butter moving into the future. And this hyper growth that you're experiencing is absolutely amazing. And I think it also goes into the to the point of what you were talking about before, is how there's more and more people now coming in and doing syndication deals. So the need now is growing to have some type of system in place that can help some of these folks out. I know I have a lot of people that listen to my podcast that are general partners. So if you listen to this, you probably definitely want to check out what Perry's working on here. It sounds pretty amazing. I got to ask you though, for now, with your experience over the past, when did you start your first syndication?
Honestly, on about a syndication, it's only 3 years ago. Property only 2015, so 6 or 7 years.
Wow. So what a great experience in the last 5 to 6 years that you've had, and explosive growth. So for somebody that is a full-time working professional and they're ready to get started, we already know they need that motivation. We talked about that. But do you have any other like last tips or tricks that you think would benefit somebody who says, okay, today's the day I've made the decision. I want to go invest in real estate, whether it's single family or they want to go straight into multifamily. What would you say to somebody like that today?
I would say if you have a W-2 job, focus on getting your primary residence that you can house hack. If you have a family and you don't want to house hack, still buy your primary residence, perhaps a duplex that you rent out the other part. If you cannot do that still, then buy your first rental property. It could be a single family, and that's totally fine. Okay, I believe that they should at least be a landlord or try to be a landlord to see how bad it is and then decide if they want to invest in syndication, because it allows you to appreciate the syndication path. okay, to appreciate being a passive investor and do nothing about it. I gave this talk as well at LIV, and 200 plus people show up to my Brownback. And one of the questions is, if you're a W-2 employee and you wonder if this is the right time to buy real estate, that may not be the question to ask. Almost every time is a good time to buy real estate. Focus on the craft, but not where in the market cycle we are. If you're one of the best investors and you're doing things 80 cents on a dollar because you have relationships to general contractors and so on, even if there is a downturn, you're going to be fine because you did everything conservatively. Don't focus on try to see if we are the right time or whatnot. You will not know. But what you can know is get in the game and be better. If you're one of the best, like in your job, in military or tech, if you're one of the best engineers working at Google, I don't think you'll worry about there is a tech downturn, because that Google engineer will have a much easier time finding a new job than someone who working at a, you know, non-second or third tier tech company.
Yeah, right on. That's fantastic and great advice, right? So if this is something you're looking to get into, go feel that pain of that first rental property and learn to appreciate all the joys that come with that and the 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls and things like that. Okay. Hey, fantastic, Perry. I love that. That's awesome. Now, this is the important question, the most important question that we ask on this podcast, because people that are listening to this right now, they're like, hey man, this guy's doing some great stuff. I really like, you know, what Perry's doing, and I want to learn more about him and maybe even check out his startup that he's doing right now. So if you could, can you share your website with us or any social medias that you're comfortable sharing with our listeners today?
Yeah, just go to cashflowportal.com and you can click on the about page. Again, it's cashflowportal.com. You can email me at perry@cashflowportal.com, or you can just add me on LinkedIn or Facebook. My name is Perry Zhang. I think there should be one or two Perry Zhangs out there. So yeah, I'm happy to chat with upcoming future real estate syndicators or current real estate syndicators about anything. And if you have pain points with your, as an LP, as a GP, with your software, or with the whole what you can do better, just let me know. I'm very curious to learn how we can do things better.
That's fantastic. And being able to accept that feedback is only going to make things better with what you're doing with the cash flow portal and for those that are benefiting from the service that you provide. Perry, that is fantastic. We'll make sure we have all of those in the show notes. We'll have links to your website as well as your social media to make it easier for those that are listening. And if you're driving, don't sit here and try to do it on your phone. Pull over or wait till another time and make a mental note. But either way, it's going to be in the show notes and you can copy and paste it from there. Make it easy for you. So Perry, this has been an amazing conversation. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed picking your brain, especially with the tech side of this. I think that was particularly very fun. So thanks again for joining me today.
Thank you, Mike.
Right on. We're out of here. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.